This interview is produced by FT Longitude in partnership with Fullerton Fund Management.
Asia's road to net zero is paved with complexity and opportunity. It's a region that has accounted for more than half of global CO2 emissions since 2019. To decarbonize will require an extraordinary amount of capital, as much as $37 trillion alone to bring its energy supply in line with net zero by 2050. But the potential is equally as big, especially where energy infrastructure is concerned. In fact, Asia accounted for 60% of the new renewable energy capacity in 2021. So, what role can private equity play in helping to transition Asia's carbon-intensive industries and assets? Where are the barriers to making climate-related investments in Asia? And how can investments in the region deliver maximum real-world impact alongside financial returns? I'm Megan Wright, and joining me to discuss this is Tan Huck Kim, Head of Alternatives at Fullerton Fund Management and a member of Fullerton's Investment Committee. Hello, Huck Kim.
Hi, Megan.
Most countries in ASEAN have now set net zero or carbon neutrality targets. So where are the main opportunities to invest private capital in Asia in support of the region's net zero targets?
Well, as a start, for Asia to achieve net zero by 2050, it's generally accepted that approximately $30 to $40 trillion of investment would be required. And at this stage, we're not anywhere near that on course to achieving that. This humongous funding gap means that there are a lot of investment opportunities across sectors, geographies, and investment stages. So fundamentally, we believe that in general, the most attractive opportunities lie in emerging Asian economies. And as you mentioned, this is because Asia-Pacific accounts for 52% of global CO2 emissions in 2020, of which China, India, and Indonesia are the three largest contributors of this emission. And within this region, we feel that the mid-market growth space will benefit the most from significant public and private spend on climate-related sectors. We like fast growth, attractive sectors that could be including the renewable energy value chain, building and construction, EV and transportation, and agriculture, and as well as companies that are supplying and supporting the region's green economy. For example, we would be looking to invest into suppliers of wind turbine equipment and components rather than investing in the infrastructure of wind farms. However, having said that, we believe that the mid-market growth companies, being the attractive in the near term, we cannot ignore the infrastructure and early-stage climate-related technology companies, which will be increasingly attractive as well, depending on the investor's appetite. And that's because Asia faces a slow progress from heavy reliance on fossil fuels and lack of access to better solutions. So as such, every investment dollar at this stage represents a good opportunity to invest.
Absolutely. And look, it's clear from the sheer size and complexity of the region that it's not going to be a straightforward process either. What do you think are the main barriers then to private equity allocating more capital to decarbonize businesses in Asia?
I think it's rather easy to look at the structural and policies advantage that Western economies have to identify the main barriers and impediments to more capital being invested by private equity into Asia. If you look at the regulations and policies while improving in Asia, they're not as supportive as that of the developed markets as yet. Public funding on decarbonization technologies and applications of carbon abatement processes are still not there. Additionally, I think the largest industries that make up Asia's economy are still more of the traditional dirty ones. And electric grid systems are not set up to be able to access renewable energy as easily. So these are some of the structural and policy headwinds that private equity faces in Asia today. However, I think that this can be easily solved on three levels, from the government level, company shareholder level, as well as the private equity managers themselves. Firstly, on the government support level, I think majority of the investments today in the green sector are largely in the infrastructure for a reason, and that's because it's traditionally enjoyed good returns due to the governmental support and subsidies. If we can extend this support to investments into technology, as well as growth companies that are actively and voluntarily reducing their carbon footprint, we would see a lot more private capital pouring in. And second, shareholder knowledge. A lot of the companies in the SME space, family-owned businesses, they're not equipped with the right level of understanding of knowledge of ESG and decarbonization. Although we are seeing that change with a new generation of better informed management. Shareholders need to realize their roles and responsibilities in raising the level of awareness and understand that the need to transform their businesses to a low carbon one is an urgent one. And lastly, I think private equity managers also have a responsibility in this space. Given that this is a nascent sector, there's a lack of track record in investing in decarbonization, unfortunately. And however, this creates a very big opportunity for private sector to participate and provide the much needed capital. I urge, of course, more managers of my ilk to then understand and gain that expertise and raise more capital to this end, as it will drive further investments towards decarbonization in Asia.
Plenty of opportunities there, and it sounds like certainly responsibility split across various different players in the space. To what extent then do you think that private equity firms can add value and expertise when it comes to ESG? Can you give any examples perhaps from your own experience?
Sure. I think by virtue of PE firms being a significant shareholder of portfolio companies, the influence of PE firms in shaping companies' ESG policies and strategy is naturally there and it's large. So as an active owner, private equity firms do have a value to add directly in a couple of ways. Number one, it's what all good private equity managers have fundamentally been doing in most of their portfolio companies, if not all, which is enhancing governance in SMEs or family businesses. As active investors, private equity can support the institutionalization of a family business, such as areas of board composition and performance, professionalization of the management teams, imposing sound labor policies, implementing environmentally friendly practices, etc. Second, I think private equity firms being localized, it's a very personable investment class. And we know that there are best practices out there, but we do need to adapt to local conditions. Emerging Asia-focused managers who are experienced with roots on the grounds, with deep understanding of the nuances at the local country level, are better able to translate some of these international standards into local context. And I think this is critical in seeking the buy-in and compliance from portfolio companies. And lastly, private equity is, I would say, being the strategic capital that drives the behavior of a lot of companies. There are a lot of companies that are seeking capital for growth, and private equity can not only provide that capital to meet the growth needs, but also actively support specific ESG initiatives and drive non-financial KPIs that ultimately increase the value of the company for a win-win situation.
It's clear also that new technologies are central to reaching net zero. I mentioned in the opening that 60% of the renewable energy growth in 2021 was in Asia. Have you seen instances of private equity bringing in expertise on decarbonization technology?
In fact, I can. I can actually use a live example in our current pipeline to illustrate how we as a private equity manager is adding value to our potential portfolio companies on the decarbonization front. We are definitely working with a number of companies in the building materials construction space. And as you know, this is traditionally a very difficult carbon abatement sector. But we have worked together with the management to map out decarbonization strategy that will help make their products green over the medium term. And it takes over a number of years because we are long-term investors and we are able to map out stage by stage how we are going to do it. In its first stage, we are seeking to invest by lowering its Scope 1 emissions by financing further development of on-site renewable energy production from sources such as solar. And in the second stage, we are financing the research into integrating green hydrogen technology into the existing production process to lower their overall carbon emissions. And lastly, on a longer term, we are connecting the company with our wider ecosystem of contacts and partners to the supranationals, as well as the technology know-how to explore how they can use carbon capture and sequestration technologies to implement in their production cycle. So those are quite a lot of to-do lists which we are helping our companies decarbonize.
A great example, thank you. And as you say, obviously there are some very difficult to abate sectors, especially within the Asian region, that need to start looking at this more closely. I'm aware too, government investment across the region shows that renewable energy and electrified transport are the major targets for fiscal spending on the climate transition. How do you think public investment will influence where private capital is then allocated?
Well, I think that beyond investment dollars, public regulations and policies are just as crucial to driving private capital behavior. A close partnership between public and private institutions will be required, as no one side can drive climate transition by themselves. The capital required to meet net zero targets, as we've already mentioned, is so large that both public and private sector will need each other to step up, particularly in poorer countries in Asia, where governments may not be able to devote as much resources and capital towards climate change. Climate change requires government policies to take the lead, as private capital tends to take its lead from policies, regulations, public spending. So it's important for government to set the stage for investments towards net zero, whether it's public spending or regulatory support. For many governments, obviously, transport and energy are the most visible sectors and lowest hanging fruit to begin tackling. And you see lots of private capital have followed suit by investing into battery technology, electric vehicles, grid integration, hydrogen technologies, and many other renewable energy value chains. However, we shouldn't just look at private capital from an investor's standpoint. Private capital can also take the form of corporates investing and researching into a cleaner future. And this is where regulations and disclosure and government-imposed carbon pricing schemes, whether it's market-based or set as tax, will keenly increase the urgency for heavy emitting industries to increase their capex towards decarbonization technologies and increase their operational carbon efficiency.
And McKinsey also reports promisingly that 15 countries across the region have now set or are committed to setting emissions reduction targets, which is fantastic to see. So looking ahead then, what kind of deal activity do you expect in Asia over the next 2 years? And how do you think private equity investors can maximize the return on their investments?
I think the funding gap is so great. We are expecting deal activity just across the entire spectrum of asset classes and stage of companies. The regulations, policies, and green taxonomies tailwind from the various economies is picking up at a very incredible speed due to each country's commitments to net zero targets, and it will augur well for investors looking to maximize returns. Of course, we have give consideration to the risk appetite of individual investors, but we believe that the private equity and growth segment is definitely set to boom, and it will definitely show the most attractive risk-adjusted returns, just given the stage of the sector in the region and the opportunities that we're seeing in the near to mid-term. If we want to catch the onset of this growth tide, investors will need to move fast because we are seeing that the valuations are still very attractive given the large potential. And this is driven largely by the expected public and private spend, fast evolving and positive regulatory changes that we're seeing across Asia, the technological innovation that is making some of these carbon abatement possible. And lastly, I think what's very important is that there is a shifting consumer demand and preference that we're seeing right now, especially with the generational change who are increasingly putting climate issues as their top priority in life. So definitely there is a lot of activity that we're going to see, and it will not be in any one sector. It will be in technology, startups, growth, as well as infrastructure.
A very fantastic and promising opportunity by the sounds of it. Huck Kim, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
This interview is produced by FT Longitude in partnership with Fullerton Fund Management.